You're listening to the Obesity Revolution. We're adding fat to fat. You can join the revolution. Follow the conversation and Sean's weight loss journey at theobesityrevolution.com. Now, here's Sean Mulroney.
What is up? Welcome to the Obesity Revolution podcast. I am Sean Mulroney. That's right. Follow me on all social media, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, any platform out there. It's just I am Sean Mulroney. And I am so glad that you are, you know, listening today. I am excited about the things that are going. And on the charts, we're moving on up. We are at 42. Last week, I think we were at 56. This week, we're at 42 in the top 100. And I am stoked. Thank you for everybody that listens to it, downloads it, that helps us out. You know, leave a review for us. You know what I'm saying? Subscribe to it. Share it out, please. I mean, we're changing how, you know, society is viewing, you know, obesity, because we, you know, we're creating the awareness and we're killing the assumptions. And as always, you know, the Obesity Revolution podcast is brought to you by the Obesity Revolution. And we're here to identify, educate, inspire, and execute. So we're going to do that. We're going to identify that problem, and we're going to help people to look, listen, and learn, look at the problem, you know, listen to the people and learn about the patterns that where obesity is concerned, but also being successful. See, a lot of people think that, you know, obese people aren't that smart. Well, I beg to differ with you. Geniuses. I mean, there's people that I know that are educated, and, you know, my good friend Brad Brewer, you know, rest his soul, that passed away about 7 months ago, was a doctor, and let that doctorate go by. It was an earned doctorate, and he passed away, and, you know, he fought against obesity, and, you know, it took his life. I mean, this guy wrote, you know, the thesis, syllabuses, not thesis, you know, for the University of Mississippi. And so, you know, don't count people that are 600 or 700 pounds out. And I know a lot of people do, but I'm not going to stand for that. It's assuming, and you know what it does when you assume. You know, it makes an ASS out of you and me. And, you know, don't do that as far as, you know, I'm concerned. And, you know, that's why we have a support group. We have a great number of people in that group that are sharing their stories, not only sharing their stories, but getting the support and the accountability that we need. And, you know, losing weight, I challenge anybody. You want to say how easy it is to lose weight, eat less, move more? Well, why don't you gain 400 pounds and then try to lose it and tell me how that is, because there's a lot of things that break down and, you know, a lot of things that are going on in our systems, and all the way back, that stems back to our, you know, our childhood, you know, even, you know, through our lives that we, have gone through, and people automatically assume. So, you know what, you have no business criticizing or, you know, giving me, you know, tell me what to do until you walk in my shoes or anybody else's. And that's why I'm excited about having this guest on today. He's been sharing his story. I don't want to take the thunder away from him and what he's doing. He's sharing it in the Obesity Revolution, you know, support group. He's sharing it on his page. Just an inspiration to me. And you're gonna love this man. I fell in love with him. He's an inspiration to me. So what I want to do is I want to, you know, welcome my good friend, Matt Antisney. What's up, Matt? How you doing? Welcome to the Obesity Revolution podcast, buddy.
Hey, Sean. Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're welcome. How are you doing today? You staying fair to Midland, or fine as frog hair, split seven ways, or what?
Man, I'm doing good, man. I'm telling you, I'm an Oregonian, so being from Oregon,
one moment.
Day, one, one day it could be sunny and the next day it could be
snowing.
Yeah, it could be horrible weather. But I you know, in Oregon we love the overcast, we love the rain and all that kind of stuff. So you grow accustomed to it over time, you know.
Yeah, well, that Oregon, you were born and raised in Oregon, am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, I was born in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah.
At a hospital, but I was raised in the west side, the metro area, which is like Beaverton, Hillsborough, Tigard area.
Right, right. Oregon's a beautiful state. I mean, it's beautiful out there, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's, I mean, some of the most majestic greenery you could ever see. You know, the oceans, the coast is really nice, up 101 from California all the way up north to through Oregon and Washington. But then you've got a bunch of you know, the wilderness, and you've got the state parks and stuff. So we're definitely known for that part of it.
Wow. Incredible, man. Well, hey, you know what? I can't wait to get into your story. You are going to inspire so many people. And, you know, you've been through it, man. I mean, you have not had a easy life.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm actually, some people, you know, they have, a lot of disadvantages and a lot of things from the beginning. I can't really say that. I think everybody comes from a broken family to a certain extent. I mean, no one's perfect. No one has,
right,
you know, a fully established, you know, type of home setting. But I think for me though, like having some solid people in my life, family, uncles, aunts, and then, you know, stepmother, stepfather, parents and stuff, you know, I had some solid people there. There were just some choices that I made early on that really kind of paved the way for me to like kind of get where I'm at now, you know. And that's, it was very self, it was very selfish, very, very, it was all birthed in pride for me, you know. And I know there's a lot of other things, aspects to like trauma and stuff too, that kind of mingle with that, but that's kind of the essential part of it.
Wow. And you know what, Matt, the thing is that you really have inspired me. You were able to come to the BC Revolution Support Group this last Wednesday, which everybody fell in love with you. And, you know, you're sharing your story on, you know, our support group. Of course, you were sharing it. And I mean, your story, you know, we've been following each other for a while and I seen, you know, what you've been through. And I can't help but start sort of, you know, at the top here. Where you have been, and I want to sort of, you know, then break it down. Let everybody know what's your highest weight and what were some of the repercussions that you've struggled with at being at that weight.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, it progressively got worse. I've always kind of struggled with obesity, even as a teenager, a young kid, and then also a teenager. But then also, you know, getting into adulthood and stuff. I got married at 17. And so like, I didn't really have a chance to settle down even in my 20s and 30s. It was just, my ex-wife and I had three daughters, beautiful daughters, all by the age of, before I turned 24. So from 17 to 24, we had three daughters and I didn't have really a solid education.
Sure.
And so you know, being obese and stuff and struggling with that, the only option I had really was to do like, I mean, I had other options initially. Okay. So there was other things there. I'll get into that, you know, when you ask me in a little bit, but I think the biggest thing was I peaked at probably a little over 700 pounds in last year in 2020. Mm-hmm. But before that, I mean, there was hundreds of hospital visits, hospitalizations, illnesses, being septic and stuff for years.
Yes.
This is like what built up to that point where I was, you know, in ICU several times. I also was on opiates from, you know, 2011 to 2019 in October. Mm-hmm. I remember the very day, the very moment, the very last pill that I took before I didn't take it anymore and so forth. So I peaked at a little over 700 pounds probably in 2020. But the last actual weight that was taken from me was in the hospital here in Eugene Springfield area here in Oregon, and it was 676. But I know that I know based on a home health nurse or registered nurse, and then also from a from Doctor on Demand from another physician here mm-hmm. in Oregon. They looked at me and they said, you're definitely well over 700 pounds. Mm-hmm. And that happened in July of last year. So August 4th was when the change really started to suffice and started to really set in for me because I couldn't breathe. I got off the opiates. Yes, but I was still crazily, wildly addicted to food. And that's been my comfort. I've been bedbound for at least close to 5 years, I think. 4.5 years.
Wow. Since 2015, 16?
Yeah. So I had a brain injury in 2015, December 29th, 2015. I went to bed. I was watching a show on my computer and I woke up and I was blind. I couldn't see at all for like a week and my head was spinning and it was the craziest feeling. And they thought I went to the hospital. They kept me for a couple of days and under observation and said that they thought it was Meniere's disease. Then they thought it was something else. And then they finally shipped me to OHSU, which is a great hospital, by the way, in Portland. It's Oregon Health and Sciences University. I had an MRI done in their bariatric MRI thing. And they had found that there was a kind of an abnormality in the brain that took place that could have been the sole cause of what happened. So that really sucked because then I had permanent myopia and all kinds of stuff going on with my eyes. But that still didn't even change me. Even after that, I was still on high levels of opiates because I was in pain. You know, it was because of the obesity. Right. I was immobile. And honestly, you know, when 2016, 2017, and 18 and all that happened, I'd given up. I mean, I would appear jubilant online, happy, you know, because I love people. That was my only conduit to people and socialization.
But well, you've got an incredible humor too. I mean, you're infectious, man. You are. I mean, no doubt about it. You have an incredible personality that's been hid.
Yeah. Thanks, man. I appreciate that. Yeah, the humor thing is just I've always kind of been like that my whole life, and I kind of use that as a way to kind of cope
exactly.
with the situation.
Yes.
So
and to mock it is to manage it type thing. Yes.
Yes. Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly right.
Yes. And so you being in your room, okay, you've been on your back. You haven't been able to get out of your bed since 2016, since that whole ordeal, right?
So there's been occasions when I've had physical therapy and home health care that was sent here by a registered physician.
Yeah.
And what happened was they would send them out and then they would do an evaluation. But because I've dealt with extreme amounts of like wounds and like wound care stuff on the right leg, my entire like right leg mm-hmm. was just decimated by lymphedema, by inflammation, and just to the point where I couldn't even move it. And then it ended up becoming where the circulation was completely like I couldn't even feel my feet, and they were ice cold 24/7.
Yeah,
even if you warmed them up, they were still ice cold. And so the permanent dizziness, you know, the circulation issues, the breathing, and yeah. So the thing was, the only time that I would leave this room is when the ambulance would come and they would bring a bariatric gurney and 12. This is no joke. Seriously, the firefighters all knew me by name. Whenever the ambulance would have to come, they knew who I was, and they would get pissed because it would be 12 to 15. I felt sorry for these dudes, man. 12 to 15 guys would have to come in. They would have to put a sheet under me. My kids can validate this. Everybody can see they've been through it. Trust me. And they would have to roll me onto that sheet and then pull me out the door mm-hmm. to the front. I couldn't breathe. They'd have to put me about 12 to 15 of them. And then this is paramedics too. And they would have to put me on the gurney. And then that process in itself was like 30 to 45 minutes. And once I got to the hospital, I would get into a room. This was like nonstop for a long time. Well, I would get in there and the pain would be so unbearable that I didn't even know how to function. But, you know, I love the healthcare professionals, and I'm sure I built a bunch of their character because of my behaviors and different. Yeah. Oh, I'm telling you, man, I built some strong nurses and some strong doctors, man. I'm telling you,
right. Seriously, that's awesome.
I was that one guy that like. They're like, man, you know, code gray.
We didn't learn this in our 8 years of college. That's right.
No way.
Right.
No, they would tell me that. They would pat me on the shoulder sometimes and go, buddy, I got to be honest with you. I've seen a lot in my career, but you take the cake. Like, and
literally,
but I was such a train wreck that I was like a badge of honor to me. And I'm just like, okay, whatever, you know. I knew it was wrong, but I was so hooked on these opiates. I was so fixated on, you know, I just gave
to get
up,
rid of the pain, right? I mean, that's what you got addicted to him for.
Right. There was a lot of mental trauma. A lot of my relationship with my ex-wife was just a complete disaster. It's been like that forever. But it was, you know, it was trying to always reconcile and never getting the satisfaction, never getting the healing, never getting anything. It was just, we were just two opposite people trying to like stay afloat, trying to survive. We had kids. We wanted them, you know, to be happy, but you know, they got caught up in the disaster. So it was just a mess. And then there was a ton of guilt that I had, enormous amount of guilt that I've had through this entire process. And now that, you know, since 2019, I've been off the opiates and I've had a
amazing
chance to like,
good job,
go through this process.
Congratulations, Matt. Well, let's unpack this. Okay. How you got here. Okay. Let's sort of, you know, reverse engineer and go from, you know, one stage to, you know, from early childhood and trauma. Okay.
Right. Right.
Let's talk about that a little bit on what you want to talk about. You know, don't go in extensively, but tell us a little bit about your early childhood and trauma first.
Well, I mean, you know, my parents, so I was raised with two sets of parents. I have my stepmother and then I have my dad, my biological dad, and then I have my stepfather and then my mom. Okay. And so there was a lot of stuff, a lot of components that happened, you know, from that side, from the side of my, you know, just, there was just a lot of stuff that happened, you know, like, one of my parents was, you know, had a lot of issues with alcohol, and that took a pretty big toll on the early situation, you know, growing up with my stepdad and then my mom and stuff. And I love them all. I'm really close to all of them now and stuff. It was just when we were younger, it was very stressful to like be in an environment like that. And then on top of that, it was trying to, I was told a lot of stuff. I was, you know, spiritual stuff, biblical things, which is all good stuff, but it was very confusing for me at a young age. So I didn't know how to really decipher like what was right, what was wrong as far as the Bible and different things. I knew that, I would say I knew the Bible in different areas. And as I progressed over time and I had my own like relationship with God and stuff,
sure,
and as that developed. But that wasn't birthed out of that. That was birthed out of me suffering and being like isolated and alone.
Right.
But when I was younger, there was this precedent, or there was this, you know, way that I would see at church how other people were supposed to be. And I never felt adequate. I never felt like I added up to that. And my brother and I, a lot of times some family members don't even realize this, but we were deeply affected by being referred to as the twins. We had names, but we always were called the twins. Oh, the twins, Matt and Amy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it was like, hey, you know, like, but, you know, meaning my brother, you know, he's deceased now, but we would talk about that. Like, you know, even when he was out of prison and stuff, it was like, hey, you know, you remember all that stuff, but just the different things. But, you know, I've learned the power of forgiveness in different areas. And as I got older, you know, I've really, really learned to appreciate and love, you know, the growth that my family's been through as far as my parents. Like, they're incredible people, man. They're I've never seen such resilient and such powerful people in my life. Like, when it comes to like shifting direction and going through hard times and stuff, that's been my example. So
that's awesome. But you've had the trauma. I mean, you've had things that happened in your, you know, in impressionable years that you've carried with you to the point that you're at now, even into your teen years. You know, you got involved in some things that you shouldn't have gotten involved in either. Am I correct in saying that?
So at the age of 13, my twin and I, we were associated with some gangs and stuff. Well, initially they were called like tagging crews or graffiti crews. And then it eventually morphed into something else, was a gang. My brother was actually to join first and he was involved. I got in, but I just never felt never felt connected like he did. He was all in, but I wasn't.
Right.
And so there was a lot of choices that were made in that time of our life that were really bad. So there was, you know, we got in trouble, got arrested. He got arrested more than a few times and was incarcerated in his youth. I got in trouble as well. But also, you know, a traumatic thing happened when I was 15. And, you know, there was, you know, being 15, if you can picture this, coming from kind of a macho kind of mindset, I was violated, I was raped. But, you know, that's something that I've told my friend, you know, various people, friends and stuff, but I don't really like, that's not something public I've ever made until now. Mm-hmm. But that was something that really had a profound effect on me, for, you know, that point on forward. Cause you just don't tell people that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then deal with it on top of that, especially when you're young and stuff and you're raising a family and all that kind of thing. That was something that was really, that messed me up, man. Honestly, that really messed me up. So
yes, I can relate. I know it messes your whole DNA up. I mean, you don't, yep. I mean, it doesn't, you know, you hold that on. You can remember it like it was yesterday and it never goes away. And no matter what we do.
Yeah. That's the thing is like, you know, it didn't happen like, and it would be horrible if it happened at any time, of course, but you know, I was like 15 though. So it was like, it was a really intense situation too. So it was,
Wow. Yeah. But your brother, he was in prison, right? And then,
my twin brother, he was actually incarcerated. He became incarcerated and got tried as an adult when he was 16.
Yeah.
And he got sentenced to, you know, a decade and a half or more into state prison, like maximum security prison, really, because it was Oregon State Penitentiary, then Snake River.
Yeah.
And basically for violent crimes, just, you know, stuff. And he got paroled in 2012. And he was out for about 5.5 months, and then he was murdered actually by his own gang.
So my goodness, by his own gang.
Yeah, but yeah, that was kind of
a... I'm so sorry, Matt. That's...
Yeah, that was a rough time for... Actually, the entire family went through a bunch of stuff on that one. That was
brother,
tough.
Man, that breaks my heart, man. I'm sorry, man. Seriously. Yeah, I mean,
that's...
Wow.
I don't know. That's just kind of goes back to one of those things about being resilient and forgiving and stuff, you know, because that's another thing that, you know, the power of forgiveness in situations like this is, you know, you realize like you can't even go forward. And that's part of my healing with my weight, you know, getting the weight off and coming to terms with each thing one by one, itemizing everything, you know, and said, hey, I got to deal with this. I got to forgive this person. I got to forgive this person. And that's kind of where I'm at. That's why I'm at where I'm at, where I decided to, hey, you know, I finally got to come out and this is where I'm at. So.
Wow. Bro, you're an inspiration, man. I can't tell you, man. I'm so honored that I know you and what you've been through. And especially, like I said, losing your brother when he was, you know, I mean, that's just heartbreaking. And the fact is that, you know, you said you got married at a young age at 17. And so you said that was sort of tumultuous and sort of troublesome. And then you raised three girls out of that. And
we both did. I mean,
you both did. Right.
There's a lot of back and forth of that too, because I was
sure. Well, you had a struggle with obese and stuff like that and opiates. Right. So tell us about that. It was a little bit of a struggle, right? Type thing.
Yeah. So I, you know, when I initially had my first real big bout, I actually worked for, a care home and, it was crazy because I got sick one morning and I told my boss, I was like, man, I'm not feeling too hot. Like I'm really dizzy. And like, I think something's wrong. Well, when he's like, well, hey, bud, you know, let's go. You know, he jumped in his car and took me in. He's a really good dude. And I got checked up and they said I had like blood poisoning. I was septic. And I remember the doctor, never forgot what he said when he came in. He says, you're a very sick man. I said, what do you mean? I was only 30 years old when that happened.
Yeah.
And he said, well, your white blood cell count is like 45,000.
Oh.
That's the same as like a cancer patient. And I said, well, what's wrong? He said, your kidneys are shutting down because you have a blood... Yeah, thing probably with like, you know, some kind of fungal thing. That was the first time that things started really happening with my right leg, and I started getting sicker and getting septic.
And I thought I was bad. I was at my highest white blood count was 26,000.
Yeah,
and
that's
you
pretty,
were at 45. Ooh, I mean, and that was septic too. That was sepsis, but you were at 45,000?
Yeah, I was 45,000, and they put me in ICU in Hillsborough at the hospital there in Quality. And they basically said, yeah, you're not going anywhere for like 2 weeks. We need to monitor this. And I had IV antibiotics. Well, that, but this is where it started with the pain meds because.
Sure. And mind you, too, a normal white blood count is anywhere to 7 to 10,000.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yes. Yeah. Exactly.
You know, and you had 40. Wow. If that puts it puts it in perspective. So go ahead. You were.
I was in a tremendous amount of pain. I had sepsis in the right leg.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened was, you know, they gave me like, you know, they gave me ibuprofen. I didn't know anything about pain meds. Even at 30, I wasn't really apt to that, you know. But then they were like, hey, you know, here, this is going to be stronger. Just it's going to help you, whatever. It's going to help with the pain. And they gave me something called Dilaudid.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell you something right now. If they ever offer you that, if anyone out there that's listening, if they offer you that, ask for a complete alternative. Like if you can do Advil, aspirin, you know, ibuprofen.
Is that, opiate that you got addicted
man,
to?
I'm going to tell you, man, that becomes your wife. That becomes your friend. That becomes your God. For me, it did. Maybe not for everybody, but for me, when that thing hit me, because of all the stuff I'd been through and all the mental anguish that I've never really talked about, that thing became a solace or a security for me, and I absolutely fell in love with it. I'm going to be honest.
Wow.
And I didn't realize it would take me as far as it did, though.
Sure.
Down the road, because I had legitimate pain over the years, but the thing that I felt like even now, I still feel like I was duped. Because why didn't the doctors take, like, I'm not blaming the doctors, okay, because I was a con, too. Because I did, when I finally got hooked on those and I was dependent on opiates, I did anything I could to get them. It was like, I didn't do anything illegal, but what I mean is, like, I would always say, you know, oh, I need more, that's not enough, I need more to get me through the week, I need more, you know. And then it just got to the point where, like, the doctor was like, hey, listen, man, if you don't, like, slow down on these, you're going to be red flag. You know what red flag? I didn't even know what that was.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what happened eventually in 2017. And then I had to fight to get back off that. And that just became the center of my, because I was still isolated. Didn't want to change yet. It was really wrecked.
Sure. Well, that was sort of like not only just food, but now, hey, I have this to take away the pain of not just being there, but the, you know, the obesity on top of that. And you know what they say about something bad or even sin or things that we get involved in that aren't good for us? You know, they take you further than you want to go. You know, they keep you longer than you want to stay, and they cost you far more than you want to pay. So that's where the things that happened to me, the addiction, nobody understands that addiction, and then replacing it. And then what do you eat? You know, you're in your room. You have nothing else to do. But, hey, I'm going to take this drug. I'm going to take this food.
And that's exactly what it was,
Yes. And, you know, it's the fact is, Matt, that you have, you know, I know it's easy to cut. And you have not revealed your face, even whenever you're in a support group meeting. You have been isolated. And you haven't had any voice, and you haven't had any validation. But here's the thing. Social acceptance validates everyone. And my thing to you is that you're validated and your voice is strong. That's what I think that, you know, we lie to ourselves. Well, we're not worthy anymore because, you know, we're 700, 600 pounds. My highest weight that I was recorded and I probably got over 700 was 687. And we go down this downward spiral that we don't know what to do with ourselves. And that's the tragedy. Hello?
Yeah, I hear you, man. So,
did they come off, Matt?
That is the craziest part of it.
So it's just, you know, going from one extreme to the other. You know, you went down this bad path, right?
Right.
And, you know, you raised the three girls, multiple hospitalizations, you know, the food addiction, you know, three overdoses. Is that correct?
Yeah, so the first one, see, this is something that I never really revealed even to anybody really, because I was too, you know, I was so worried about losing the one thing that kept me out of pain, because I know if I revealed that, it would be, but there was one time where I took too much, and I want to make this clear though, all three of those were not intentional, they were completely accidental, but
sure.
Because the pain wasn't, You know, I wasn't educated on what they can
and
do.
You didn't, you didn't know how to regulate it, you know?
No, man. I'm telling you, man.
Just like a heroin addict, you know? Heroin addict takes, you know, one shot. That's why people overdose after they give up heroin, and then they come back to it. They have to take the same amount, you know, that they were taking before they
got clean. That's exactly right.
Yes.
Well, and that's the thing. I want to say this, too, because I'm really passionate not only about obesity, but these opiate thing, the epidemic, because what people don't realize, a lot of these people that have these massive heroin addictions or these hard, you know, pill addictions, and then they get off, they get off for months, or they get clean for a year or two, and then all of a sudden they go back and try to take the same amount that they've taken before. They'll instantly die. They need to understand that.
Yes, right.
It's not a game.
No, it's not. No, you know, it's not.
And that's the thing is that, you know, and we're talking about, you know, I literally talked to people online that they don't even know my story. I haven't even told my story until the complete story until now. But I've really
this
really,
is an exclusive, folks. Listen, this is an exclusive. This is exclusive, yeah, Matt.
I sympathize with Tisney. People because, especially sympathize with people that have been through that, because these are kids, parents, you know, people. And listen, it doesn't discriminate. You could be a lawyer and be hooked on pills. You could be, you know, a gang member and hooked on. I mean, it doesn't matter who you are, what class of society. You know, race, creed, that's the thing. It doesn't discriminate.
Right.
It'll take you out.
Well, and opiates have got into, like, you know, before it used, like, you know, was a back alley type, you know, drug, especially with heroin. And opiates are just one step to heroin, of course. And then what happens is that it's taking people that are, you know, in the suburbs. It became a suburb, you know, type, you know, epidemic, and it was killing, you know, the rich kids and the people that the affluent, you know, people. And you're exactly right. Opiates are a devastating thing. And it's killing everybody. You're exactly right. And it's no respecter of persons.
Well, 2018 was the third one. That was the one that was like I was in the hospital, and they said I was slurring my words, and then my oxygen saturation level dropped to like high 60s, low 70s. And if you know anything about oxygen saturation level, that's like barely breathing. And so they got concerned, but yet I still, you know, they didn't really, you know, I was really good about like trying to really focus myself, you know, even when I was on the pain, because I really was in pain, but I was on such high doses that it didn't even have an effect anymore on pain management. It was just keeping me not sick.
Yeah.
So the thing was that one time they gave it to me, I literally passed out, and thank God to this young kid that was a new respiratory therapist at the hospital had walked by before he went to lunch, saw me in there, and he said that I looked purple, and he hit the code, and there was, and all I remember is waking up like 2 hours later, and there was this lady on my chest getting ready to do chest compressions, and I had a mask like that oxygen. I can't even explain. It was like a helmet kind of, or a big old complete face mask.
Yeah.
And they had to Narcan me like two or three times. And the guy noticed that was wrong, you know, something was wrong. And I was like, dang. And he basically, I never forgot him, you know, because he was brand, and he was only a respiratory therapist for like three weeks to a month when that happened. Wow. And he was like, man, you're my first big situation. I'm like, whoa.
That was
the beginning of the end right there, man.
Definitely. Wow. And he saved your life pretty much, huh?
He did. He did, man. I'm telling you, that they told me I was less than 5 minutes from passing away. So that was traumatic for me. My uncle actually came down. My mom and my uncle, Uncle Jerry, and some of the family and stuff came down and visited me when I was in the hospital. And that meant a lot, because I don't remember if I had talked to you about the extent of what had happened, but that's why I was in there and what had happened. It was really bad. So.
Well, all this stuff got you to where you're bed bound. You're still, so everybody knows Matt is still bed bound. He's still there. Has to sleep. He has to have a BiPAP on all day. Sleeps with one. That's what happened with his brain injury, that, you know, because he wasn't wearing it. And the thing that I want to get into now is we unpack the bad, okay? And I want to end on such a positive note that everybody's just inspired and ready to go. And anybody out there that's struggling right now that listens to this and you're bed bound, you can't move, you haven't walked, and you don't know how long, you don't know where to go. Well, Matt is doing it. He is making the progress that he needs to make. He finally said, okay, enough's enough. He's getting his mind you know, in check and mind right. So here's where we're gonna hit. We're gonna bring us down to a landing right now, Matt. Okay, here it is.
Okay.
So you're in your bed. Okay, you're, from what I understand, your caregiver got you the X3 bar. Am I correct in saying that? The X3 bar?
Yeah, so actually, you know, I got a couple of really, really, really good friends, solid friends, best friends. I consider them best friends. That's kind of a but anyway, yeah, my friend Fernando, he's been for months like, hey, bro, like, listen, you got to do this. This will change everything. And his credibility with me is top notch, you know. And I had already had the core group of people. So I had Adam, my caregiver. I had Kenny, my friend, who was, you know, praying with me all the time. Mm-hmm. And then I had Fernando, who was like constantly like, hey, bro, you can do it. You can do it. Just get this bar. So it was just these core guys that, funny enough, they're all pretty much the same age. Kenny and I are close to the same age, but yeah, it was just this constant encouragement, and they've always been encouraging, but it was whether I was receptive or not. Does that make
sure,
sense?
Sure. Yes. Yes. So yes.
I was,
yes.
I was. I finally.
You knew it, but not applying it right.
Right.
Exactly.
Man, they cared. I'm telling yes. you. Yes. Yeah, it's one thing, and I've always dealt with that. Is I could know a lot, but the application means everything.
Yes, it
does. You know,
does.
I could know the word. Yes. I could know the Bible. I could know education. Different.
And
things,
you are. You're an educated. You're a very educated and smart and brilliant man at that. You know. And it's like the same thing is that everybody assumes that we're not, you know, because, hey, we let ourselves get this way. Well, it's just that one thing that everybody assumes. And you had a really good support system is what you're saying, is that they were telling you the truth, but you weren't applying it. And then all of a sudden,
not just that. I mean, I have all three of my daughters are incredibly supportive. Like, they're nice. Radically supportive of
awesome.
They just want to see me. They just want to see me win.
Yes.
You know, so that to me. Is like, you know, that does kind of make me emotional because, you know, the stuff that my girls have been through just in their short life, and the resilience of these girls that they have, it blow anybody away because they're like young women and they're thriving and they're growing into like these independent, taking ownership for their lives. And
tell your daughters they inspire me and everybody. I tell them they're awesome.
They inspire me to live.
I want to say that. What's their names? What's your daughter's name?
It's Evangelina, but we call her Lena, and then Marcelina, but I call her Marchie or Marchie Poo, and and then Alexa, and yeah. So
well, shout out to you three girls. I want you to know, thanks for taking care of your daddy. And
yeah,
shout out
do.
From me and everybody else. And that's awesome. So go ahead, Matt. I mean, you have a support system around you. They got this bar. And so tell everybody what you've been doing for the last 13 days.
So I'll say just really fast recap. August 4th, last year, I started changing the dietary choices. What changed first?
That's right.
Nutrition. I embraced like more.
Nutrition is 95% of weight loss. Yes.
Big time. So like
yes.
It was like an 80-20 factor, like 20% protein, 80% vegan, but drawing the majority of the proteins from the vegan part of it.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, a lot of people, you know, argue you got to be, you know, protein. And I agree with that.
Right. Well, do what you got to do.
If you're exercising and doing a bunch of stuff right, I wasn't doing any of that. So I was just in survival mode at that point.
Right.
Fast forward to now, you know, I finally called, I told Fernando, I said, at the end of December, I said, bro, I'll consider it. January 7th, I ordered it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It came, was it 7th I ordered or did I receive it? Yeah, I think I ordered the 7th. It came and then just 13 days ago, I started doing it, and honestly, I have my mask on the first time, so I can't.
Yes.
I can't breathe without my mask on, and I was just blown away by like the way my upper body feels, the way lower, and a lot of the guys in the group that I'm in with that specific exercise thing, these guys are fit. A lot of these guys are fit.
Oh, I know.
Some guys that are
yeah.
Heavy, but these guys are super supportive, and it's literally backed up by science. It's the X3 bar, and it's Dr.
Nice.
Squish, and I think that's how you say his name. And the whole thing is legit, man. And so I'm sketchy about everything, even if they say it's like, you know, backed by this or backed by that, because everybody wants to sell something, right? But I knew that Fernando's credibility in this aspect was legit. So I said, hey, you know, I'll give it a try. So it is pretty spendy, but I can tell why it is now, and I can tell why it's a legitimate product, because I can feel it in my body already. So I can feel it in my body already. And
what you're doing is you can't get out of your bed literally, but yeah, you are exercising in your bed, laying down with this bar, the X3 bar around your back, and you're using it and you're pushing it and like doing bench presses right there in your bed.
Well, what blew me away after like the third or fourth day, I was telling Adam, because he's the one that monitors, does my videos and excerpts and all that. The crazy thing, I was like, hey, man, like, this is crazy because it's really hard. It feels like you're dying when you're doing it. But then when you're done and you turn to the side, like an enormous amount of energy just rushes through you like 5 minutes, 10 minutes later. And you're just like, dude, this is crazy. I'm not used to this.
Dude.
You know?
Brother, I mean, and I love what you keep sharing, and I mean, everybody, you know, floods you every time you shared in the Obesity Revolution support group. Everybody just floods you and just are for you. I'm for you, Matt. You know that we are brothers, and we are gonna conquer this one way or the other. And what you've been through, brother, you are more than a conqueror. And you know what? Your obesity does not define you. And you doing something about it, I mean, you're going to get there because you're determined and you've been through everything to make you resilient to get where you're at. And so we're coming down to the final. What I want you to do, I want you to give a final thought and a charge to everybody out there that's struggling, that's been, you know, bedbound, and then even people that don't understand obesity. Why don't you give your final thought and also a charge to everybody?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to say that there's, you know, I think the biggest thing is that to understand is that there's hope, and that you can be in the darkest pit and you can be in the worst position. But there's this phrase I've been using for like a year now, and I tell Adam and my daughters and everybody this, is that I use this phrase called, you know, this is my dark room sublime, because, you know, the word sublime means, you know, sunshine, happy, excited, exuberant. And then, you know, the dark room that I've been in, as I've been in a dark room, literally for years now, not months, days, years, where I've had to sheet up, and I've had to do that because of my vision and my sight and the dizziness. But I've learned to turn that sadness or that mourning into joy when nothing else was around and I had nothing and everything was falling apart, you know, losing everything I did. So literally God was all I had left. And I want to make that clear, is that, you know, everybody has their cornerstone or their crutch. For me, it's Jesus Christ. I mean, he's the
awesome.
For me, that's the number one element, the number one source of everything that I, you know, if I don't have him, I have nothing. Wow. Nothing. There's nothing for me is worth, there's no life worth living. There's no hope. And so that's my forever hope is that faith in him. And yes, I know there's application and everything, but when it comes down to the nitty gritty of the brokenness, you know, I want to say this to, you know, to people that are, if you are bedbound or if there's people that are struggling with weight, that you can really, really do it if we really, really apply it. But I suggest having a support system. It's not, listen, we have to come to terms that we can't do this on our own. Mm-hmm. We are strong, because the only way you can get through something like this, you know, and still survive is be strong. But with that said, if you don't learn to knock the walls down, the inner fortress, and let people in and be accountable to people and have them speak into your life what you need to have them speak into to tell you the truth. That doesn't mean what you want to hear. That means what you need to hear. And then it won't work. Nice. Because I did it for years. I'm 40 years old and I've blocked so many people out when they tried to help me. And it's frustrating, you know?
Wow. So that's good, Matt.
You have to give people the benefit of the doubt when it comes to, you know, understanding your situation. Be patient with them as they're patient with you. It's a coexistence thing, man.
Brother, so let me say this. There is hope, right?
Yes, absolutely.
You're worth it. Am I right?
Yep,
and everybody out there is worth it.
Yep,
and that's right. And you don't have to do that, but it's knowing the truth, but it's applying the truth. And whenever you said I had to take ownership of this, and you did, and when somebody wants to help you, and people that don't tell you what you want to hear but what you don't want to hear, but whenever you do that, you apply it, is what you're saying, bottom line,
right? Yes.
And your cornerstone is Jesus Christ, which is awesome. I'm a man of faith, and I agree with that. That's what's gotten me through so many things and struggles. But Matt, I want to tell you something. You're amazing. And thanks, man. I love you from the bottom of my heart. My heart's knit to yours. And whatever I can do for you in our community, whatever we can do for you, we are here for you, bro. We are here for you 150,000%. Just remember that.
I appreciate that, brother. I'm happy to I'm happy to be part of that, man.
Well, you are. You're part of the Obesity Revolution. And by the way, we have a support group that Mattson shares his story. Other people, you know, thousands of people do. And we'll, that's all in the show notes. Join our free group. And you know what? If you want to join the revolution, go to theobesityrevolution.com. That will be in the show notes. Join us because we can make a difference. And you know what? Everyone that's listening out there, you really are the best part of the obesity revolution. And don't ever forget that. You are the best part. I love you. And just remember this. Get healthy and stay healthy. Until next time, just like what Matt said, he said that it was his dark room sublime. You're in a dark room right now. There's light, and you're the light. You don't have to look for the light at the end of the tunnel because that's you. Get in there and go, and we got this. Love you all.
Thanks for listening to the Obesity Revolution. Now it's your time to join the revolution. You can follow Sean's weight loss journey and get coached by trainer extraordinaire Brandon Glore at theobesityrevolution.com.